You're listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental.
How are you feeling after that, Matt?
I feel a lot better than Bob.
Extra Time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Get lost. Get lost.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental from my apartment in Bedside, Brooklyn. I'm Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer. You know these faces, Dave, Matt, Charlie, Ricardo, Pepe. What? Man of the hour. Let's get it started with a bang. Bro, we thought it was over. And then here you come, banging it off the post, putting it in, making things happen. Congratulations. How do you feel?
Thank you. Thank you. I mean, I'm super excited, you know. I knew this team was going to make it. We weren't going to give up, and it happened, man. We got the tie, went extra time, and we won in PKs.
Ricardo, you get the goal, the massive goal, coming back from on the brink of your season being done. How important was that for you in particular, your confidence going forward? Because I'm watching you play. I'm thinking, why aren't you starting every match for FC Dallas?
No, man, it's a boost. It's a boost, you know what I mean? We got another important game to come. You know, you got to stay humble. Try to keep working, and you know, when the moment presents, we gotta be there.
You getting on the scene more, getting starts this year, but last year the playoffs was a big moment, an almost moment. How much was that talked about this week? How much were you guys thinking about that today?
No, we knew how painful it was last year. I mean, it was a close game. The last minute, we got that taken away from us. And I mean, like I said, we weren't gonna give up. This was our opportunity, and we grabbed it, man.
You jumped on your captain's back after the PK shootout. And Matt Hedges said something to you. What were you guys talking about? What are you saying? How are you feeling in that moment?
No, I mean, Matt's always been a guy who's, he's always pushed me. He's always been there for me, always, you know, learning, always teaching me stuff. I mean, you know, he told me that, you know, I had a great game.
What did you think when that ball hit the post? Or did you have time to think? Were you thinking, oh, God, no? Or were you thinking, I got this. It's coming right back to me.
No, I knew. I kept believing, and then I was there for the rebound, and I knew it was coming back.
I've never seen a PK shootout like this one, Ricardo. I mean, it's just saltiness across the board. Everybody's bottom corner, top corner. It's just perfection, perfection, perfection. Yeah. How did you experience the PKs?
No, the PK, I mean, I've always been good at PKs, to be honest with you. Know, obviously, shooting one at the MLS is a little tougher and, you know, a little nervous, but, you know, I mean, you know, nerves behind, and we got to go up.
Hey, man.
Ricardo, take us in the back room.
Yeah, I hear them celebrating back there. I hear them celebrating. All right, Ricardo Pepe down the hallway to go celebrate his FC Dallas teammates. He was like, come on, guys. I hear them in there. They're having so much fun. Why can't I be there? I'm talking to you. Why right now?
Yeah. Eddie, by the way, the one holding the phone, hooking it up. Thank you.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you so much. Thank you so much, by the way, to all the PR teams who have helped us out with these interviews afterwards. We know it's a weird time for everybody, and certainly numbers on the ground can be different. So big thank you to everybody who's hooked us up. We have Tim Melia coming up here on the show in just a little bit. We have Dane St. Clair as well, a little back-to-back goalkeeper action in that. Since 7 games down, 10 more to go. Of course, the ultimate goal is MLS Cup on December 12th. The Audi 2020 MLS Cup playoffs have been spectacular so far. I got to say, watching that PK shootout in the second half of that Dallas-Portland game with you guys, basically in the Zoom room, was like as close to what I've felt in previous playoffs as I've been so far, of just jumping up and down, making jokes, yelling, takes flying, people just saying ridiculous things. It's been incredible. We're doing double duty. If you're watching right now on YouTube or Twitter or on MLSsoccer.com or the MLS app, awesome. Thank you so much for being with us. I'm monitoring what's happening up on the YouTube chat. We're also putting this out the podcast. So if it's Monday morning and you didn't stay up and you're listening to it, just understand where we're coming from. We are still up here. We're still jacked up because it is 1:14 a.m. Eastern time, and FC Dallas just pushed their way on to face the winner of, we shall see on Tuesday, Seattle or LAFC. Also on this night, Tim Melia going down in history, a legend, a god. Don't ever try to test this man when it comes to penalty kicks. He saved all 3.
You know why? Strong Island, baby. It's on the island.
Oh, my God. Should have known. Took the San Jose Earthquakes out of this playoffs. And, of course, Minnesota United handling business home a year after losing to the Galaxy. They win 3-0 and move right along. Thanks to who? Hot boy, Kevin Molino. We're going to talk about Orlando City. We're going to talk about Rodrigo Schlegel. We're going to talk about Nashville. We're going to talk about Gustavo Bowe. We're going to do all of that. But I want to start right here, guys. And I want to start with like kind of what really got you going? What made you feel like, ah, oh, God, playoff time. I love it. This is why I love it. What is the moment, Dave, from this weekend that has been the most memorable so far as we begin this journey?
It was the part, and know that I'm speaking metaphorically, unfortunately, when everyone took their hair and lit it on fire and then tried to play soccer for the next 3 days. Every game has been off the walls, and that's what you get when it all matters. And I think we talked about it a week or two ago when we had that Philly-Columbus game, and then on decision day, you could feel it, you could taste it, that it was a little different, and then it all came together. The Revs got it started off against Montreal, just wild, and it's been stoppage time. Penalty kicks, wild goals, subs, unexpected. It's just been awesome to watch, and it's just been so much energy.
I will never forget in my entire life Rodrigo Schlegel in Orlando City and the confusion and the drama and 25 minutes of PKs and an Argentine center back shuffling to his left and making a save that he has no right to make to win a game for a team that had, honestly, based on history, no right to even be in the position to think that they would have good things happen to them. I mean, Orlando City has just been under it for most of their MLS time. And to have them get their very first playoff win, thanks to a little used center back going to Oscar Pereja saying, Poppy, I can do it, coming on for Pedro Gallese, who might have been the standout performer of the entire playoffs, and to make a save that sends them on to the next round and keeps their dream alive. I mean, that's one of those things that we'll be talking about forever. Forever and ever and ever. I don't know what it'll
be. There has to be a Continental Rodrigo Schlegel Award starting from here on out. I don't know what it will be, but it has to be.
I don't know. You say that, but then Timmy Milia comes in and just absolutely stones San Jose 3 times in a row and just says, I got it, guys.
But if Tim Melia had played center back and then did that, then I did.
Yeah, 100%. But can we talk about Schlegel's first attempt at saving Castellano? When you saw that, you said, oh,
he was just getting warmed up, Charlie. He was just getting warmed up.
Like, his stance could use a little bit of work. He did not have the most athletic looking goalkeeper stance, if we're being honest with you.
Yeah.
Doyle, what stood out for you and how are you feeling right now? So basically, you get the present we all want, which is this moment at the end of the year where it's just 90 minutes and go home.
I'm completely overwhelmed by the late drama, to be honest with you, because other than the Minnesota-Colorado game, and full credit to Minnesota for putting that one away pretty early and then just keeping Colorado down for the entire second half, it seems like there's been something in just about every game. The one that is forefront in my mind, though, is Kansas City versus San Jose, because we get out of this game with all the same questions that we already had about Sporting Kansas City defensively and just toughness wise. We got a great Wando moment, like one of the best Wando moments we've ever had. And then, as Charlie was saying, we got Tim Melia being Tim Melia. The man is 6-0 in PK shootouts in his career. Credit to our guy, Evan Ream, for this stat. There have been 2 times in the 25 years that MLS has existed that an MLS team has failed to even score in a penalty shootout. One was today, San Jose against Tim Melia, and the other one was 2010 when Charleston beat the Chicago Fire in a U.S. Open Cup penalty shootout. You know who the goalkeeper was in that day? Tim Melia. On loan from RSL. That's an incredible stat. So that's what's forefront of my mind right now. Just a wild couple of days of games.
So David Denskoki, a legend if there ever was one, hit us up and said, if the craziest of 2020 has felt like it lasted 3 or 4 years already, then we must already be in the 7th round of the 2020 Audi MLS Cup playoffs. Right? No, we're only 7 games in. There are 10 more to go. We have 3 more on Tuesday. You'll get the final one of round one out in the Western Conference. Seattle LAFC. The better than Bob Bowl, as I've been calling it, both in my mind and on this show over and over and over and over. Plus those 2 games with the 1 and 2 seeds in the East because of the play-in round. So you have Philly and the Revs, their 6th matchup of the year. And then you also have on the bottom of that bracket, Toronto, Nashville. We're going to talk about all that. We're going to preview those games. We're going to go through the first round. But first, let's take a look at the bracket. And if you're listening, we'll talk through the bracket right now. So in the Eastern Conference, you know it's Philly, New England. Then it's Orlando waiting for the winner of that game. We will see who moves on to take on Orlando City, Oscar Pereja. Then on the bottom, Columbus moved on. They had some late drama too. They didn't know if they were going to pull it out against the Red Bulls, but in the end they did, a 3-2 win. They are waiting on Toronto and Nashville. On the other side, Sporting Kansas City, by the skin of their teeth, move on. And they've been snake bit in the playoffs for a while now. I can say double post, you know exactly what that means. They're on, they'll take on Minnesota United, the 1 and the 4 seed. And then 6 seed FC Dallas, bringing the upset tonight, knocking off Portland, big time. As we just talked to Ricardo Pepi straight off the top, they're partying right now. They're going to take on either Seattle or LAFC. So before we get into that game, before we do what we do best and go real deep into the soccer, I want to get a little bit personal here. It's been a tough year for everyone. A lot of people out of jobs, and that came to MLS HQ this past week. That includes a number of our closest friends, people that we worked with, in some cases for a decade or more. People you've enjoyed on this podcast. Maybe you cursed them. Maybe you grew up with them, as I have, on this very, very show. So while we're giddy right now, and I truly am, about playoff soccer and Major League Soccer, we're doing this show with just a little bit of a heavy heart. And we just want those folks to know who lost their jobs last week. In particular, those of you who were with us in the content mines, just chipping away every single weekend, every single day, to know that we are thinking about you right now. Thank you for everything that you have done for Extra Time, everything that you have done for Major League Soccer, everything that you have done for this soccer culture that we all love and are so committed to. Thank you. We are thinking of you, but the show must go on. And so it did. All right, let's get into it. Let's talk about FC Dallas and Portland. We were going to push this thing way down. We're like, you know, I don't know. It's not really living up to the drama of previous games, but you just had to wait for it. And the Timbers get their goal, and you're thinking, wow, Jorge Villafaña, when the sueño becomes reality. Sorry, I stole that from somebody in the Zoom. Yeah, you roll your eyes. Was that you, Dave? Okay, that was a good one. Anyway.
But I said it, but what, my delivery was cool.
Yeah,
he nailed it a little bit better. That's fine. Whatever. That's his second goal in two games. He hadn't scored in 5 years before that. He roofs it. But then Ricardo Pepi comes on. The moment that, I don't know if everybody's been waiting for that moment, Dave, but it's definitely one that you have been waiting for.
Watching this kid play since U17s, U15s, FC Dallas, USL. And he said it to us, but Charlie, you know better than I do. He has no doubt in his mind he's going to finish this at some point. And I think he's a cold-blooded finisher. That's why he's going to start a World Cup game for the U.S. national team. Let's go, Ricardo Pepi.
And this would have been one of the most absurd goals in MLS history.
Yeah, Diego Valeri chip into that back post.
Whether he was actually trying,
you know, he was not trying to shoot it. Yeah.
But then, I mean, it went to penalties, and it was ice. Like, these guys were cold blooded right up until the very end, and unfortunate for Jorge Villafaña. But this game, 60 minutes in, we were all saying, like, somebody needs to do something. This game has got to come to life a little bit. I thought that Luchi Gonzalez, he deserves credit for making a couple of substitutions. He put on Tanner Tessman and the Ghanaian kid whose name I forgot. I was going to say Atueni. It was the other Ghanaian kid they drafted a couple years ago. And those two guys changed the game, gave him a little bit of directness, and then Pepi coming on as well. And actually, Pepi is a forward, right? He's a cold-blooded finisher. We've seen that. But he actually plays sort of withdrawn a little bit for Lucci this year. Gets him on the ball more, and he gets him. If you watch this run, he's actually starting off the center backs a little bit and is able to just get a couple of steps of a jump there, and it's a great ball into space by Matt Hedges. Dallas stole this one, but Portland left the door open, and Lucci made the right moves to get his team through it.
We've heard a lot this week from Dallas about the Seattle game last year, what it meant, how they handled it, how they learned from it. I don't know if they overcorrected. Lucci came in. He started Ryan Hollingshead in midfield. They sat deep. They played defensive. They played to not lose. It felt like for the first half of this game, maybe even more. But it worked in the end. The subs came in. They brought the energy. They changed the tempo. And I think you saw both in the San Jose game, the SKC game, and this game, the team that scored late to tie it, San Jose in one and Dallas in the other one, played better than in the extra time period as well and felt like they were pushing more to get the win. And I'd love to see Dallas take some of that from the start next game for it not to be a pure defensive structure. Let's stay in this game and then figure it out. and maybe they learn from this experience. Maybe they gain confidence from it, whatever it is. But this is a huge moment for this club either way, because they reset themselves a few years ago and they've kind of been waiting for this moment.
Would you do that if you're Lucha Gonzalez? Because that's what they did last year and it didn't end up working out in the end. Like, it was wonderful. It was awesome for all of us, but it wasn't awesome for FC Dallas. So you, I guess it will be less rest for who their opponent is, but would you, with your young legs, just say, we'll just outlast you. We'll wait you out. We have difference makers. They may not be as potent as LAFC or Seattle. So let's take it to the 70th minute with us still in the game. Why give the other side an opportunity? Who is more potent? I don't know if you guys agree with that, but I think both those teams would believe that. Let's take it as long as we can and try to be the team that does what we did tonight. Maybe not coming from behind. Let's not give up that first goal. But it wasn't like Seattle was banging down the door all night on them.
Portland, you mean? Yeah, no.
It's 1:14 a.m.
I generally hate it when managers come out and play their fullbacks on the wing and play a little bit more defensive. To me, it signals kind of a lack of confidence. But they actually did play really well at Seattle last year doing the same thing. It was Reggie Cannon on the wing. Reggie got a goal. Ryan Hollingshead was actually pretty great tonight on the wing, even though I think he's much better as a fullback. So I don't like it, but at this point, he's done it twice. They played really well last year. They didn't play as well this time, but they got the win. So it kind of stands to reason that whoever they play against is probably going to see the same type of look from Dallas in this next round.
But
go ahead.
I was just going to say, they lost so much having Nelson at left back and not Hollingshead. That's what killed them. Hollingshead played well in midfield. Yeah, I would just say...
Nelson wasn't great, but what killed them was Ricuarte doing nothing. And Jesus Ferreira, again, just having a really struggle of a year.
Absolutely. And I would just say, with this group, I believe in ethos and what you want to do. And I think the team takes a message from, I think every team does this, but to say, hey, we're going to sit back and keep it tight and just try and last. I think that comes through into the team and there's a difference in your mindset and what you believe you can do. And part of what made them great last year, and they've done it less this year and hasn't been as easy the last few weeks, is the, like, we're just going to run into a wall, but we're going to do it together and we don't care, which is something Lucci's always gotten from his team's youth all the way down. And I would like to see that because they've shown they have the quality and I think the mentality to get through the big moments. So why not step out there and believe you can win it, because you've proven that you'd belong on those fields. Charlie's already shaking his head at me. That's how New Hampshire's going to play? That's what you're going to give me?
All I say is you could not go out and just attack Portland and play right into their hands, or a team that can play on the counter. That would be, it'd be ludicrous. And if you do that against Seattle, you know exactly what's going to happen. Be composed, be balanced. You don't have to just defend, but there's got to be a good balance of when you can press, when you can be aggressive, but also knowing, all right, we don't want to open ourselves up for the counterattack or for them to play in behind us. So I think what they're doing right now is a recipe for success for them in the MLS playoffs.
Can we talk about coming into this game, by the way? The debate to me was Felipe Mora or Jeremy Obobese, and I don't know that Obobese is fully healthy to start, but you saw with Mora in there, they don't have anything to play off of at center forward, and it totally fell on either moments of a fullback pushing up or Valeri trying to find space, and Eric Williamson going out hurt that as well, because Paredes does not have the passing range or the creativity that he has. But for this Portland team, I mean, this was the worry last year, and it seemed like they fixed it. And you're not going to knock a team that's missing two DPs and an MLS MVP.
Portland was a much better team this year than they were last year, and we saw that this summer when they were all healthy. They got hit, as you said, they lost two DPs. Obobese clearly wasn't the same player, in this game, and thus wasn't able to play more than 30 minutes. Williamson going off early. Injuries are part of, like, you have to have good luck with injuries during the playoffs. You don't win. Like 2018, they were completely outplayed by the Sounders, but Chad Marshall and Christian Roldan got injured and the Timbers got a couple of goals, and that's why the Timbers advanced. You know, sometimes you have good luck, sometimes you have bad luck. If I'm Portland, I look at the whole of everything that happened this season and I am jacked for 2021. Even with Chara and Valeri getting a year older, they're not playing like the 35. You know, so I don't think that there should be any panic at all in the Portland camp about this game. Disappointment, obviously, because they were the better team for a huge swath of time, but they were the better team with their third string center forward and missing their MVP, frankly, in Sebastian Blanco, and having to deal with a bunch of other injuries as well. So I don't think that Portland should overreact to what happened tonight. Sometimes you get the breaks, sometimes you get the double post in your favor, and sometimes it goes in the other direction.
They're the one team that really has a consolation prize. And I know it's a weird one. I know it's a 2021, but they do have MLS's back tournament. They do have those moments. And it ends before they wanted it to, but FC Dallas rolls on, the sixth seed, doing the business. They will take on the winner of Seattle and LAFC. That game, of course, we will preview it. It is on Tuesday night. It's the late game. We will be here after that game once again, as Extra Time will be in the post-game show realm for every single game all the way up to the conference finals. There will still be post-game shows then. It'll just be the Audi 2020 MLS Cup Playoffs post-game show, and there's the Audi pre-game show every single match day as well. Congratulations to Lucci. Congratulations to Ricardo. Congratulations to that club. In the playoffs, they've been waiting for that moment for a while. They went to the conference finals a couple years ago, but with this young team with Lucci, that's the first time. So we'll see what they do in this next round. Tim Melia, though, we're going to talk to him in just a second. We banked this interview right after he got done from the boot room in Kansas City. Ah, what a game. What a game. I said San Jose is like the Peyote of MLS, and we got it, baby. It was going everywhere. You didn't even believe what you were seeing at times. Walk me through just who has the feel for this one. Who wants to like kind of explain to people? You know, Charlie, do you have a little bit? Do you have the feel for it? Like, what did we see? What happened?
We saw exactly what makes San Jose great at times, and we saw exactly what makes them horrible at times. When they try and get expansive, building out of the back, and they could, because they spread the field, center backs, defenders who are building out of the back are isolated. If there's a bad ball, if there's a turnover in the midfield, then they're looking at a 2v2 or 3v3, sometimes a 2v1, and the good teams finish. And then SKC, they got their goals. But San Jose, you saw what Judson means to this team and Jackson Ewell. Judson breaking up all the plays. I mean, he covers so much ground, tough tackler. And then Jackson Ewell, when he's on the ball, he's able to, when he's focused and he has time and space, oh, he can pick you apart and he finds the right guys. And then it was all about Espinoza creating on his own, being a one-man show. And he really took the game and controlled it. When he got out into that open space, he was able to beat the players 1v1. He was able to create for himself and others. Also, a player that probably is underrated because he plays for San Jose. When he's fit, he's a great player. But the same kind of worries when you look at Sporting Kansas City. It's the defensive problems. And they haven't played the top teams in the Western Conference in the regular season. And now in the playoffs, they get San Jose. But they haven't been playing against Seattle. They haven't been playing against Portland. They haven't been playing against these top teams. So we have yet to see where they really are. And we're going to get a chance to see what they are versus Minnesota. And I picked them in the bracket to beat Minnesota in this round because we saw what they did in the first half of the MLS back tournament when they played in the first match in that tournament. And if Alan Pulido's back, he gives you that creativity. He's that player who can break down teams. He can create goals. And Sporting Kansas City are very strong going forward because they're dynamic. We saw Jurso today, just very dynamic player. Kyrie Shelton, he didn't have a great game, but he just offers something because he's strong, he's athletic, he's pace, he can hold up the ball. Johnny Russell, when he's coming in on his left foot. But again, Puncic and Winston Reed, I watched them and oof. I mean, at times
Charlie's drooling watching.
Yeah, look, Charlie's like, I fully expected. Contract. I thought you guys were in the layup line throughout this game, especially when Shea Salinas scores, just getting ready to dunk all over me in this show. I fully expected. I was like, I'm Sean Bradley. It's I'm coming. Just going up. I'm going to get posterized. It wasn't.
We're just warming up.
You can't. They won. You can't now. They go on to the next round. They survived. By the skin of their teeth.
Matt Doyle asked on this show.
You acted like they worked. You acted like I was insane.
No, Doyle asked on the show 7 times, what do you need to see from KC in this game to believe in them?
Yeah.
No one saw anything to believe in them. If anything, I believe in them less in this game. I will give you Alan Pulido. He's the best player on this team. He can change every. He can change a lot for them. But still, Winston Reed and Puncic against Molino and Reynoso? Stop.
Yeah,
stop.
I mean, you saw what the Quakes did to Sporting Kansas City on the break today, right? It was they were able to repeatedly get out into open field and punish those fullbacks who get up so high for Sporting KC and put Ilya, who's not the most mobile defensive midfielder in the world, and then that center back pairing into positions where they have to make plays in the open field. I like Minnesota's chances against that. I'm not saying they're favorites, but I certainly like their chances to do some damage. The flip side for Sporting Kansas City, they have a bunch of things that they do really well in attack. Charlie listed a lot of them. One of the best things on corner kicks, they go near post for that flick on every time. They do that every single time. And if you get beat to that near post, and it's Roger Espinoza usually, but sometimes they send Kyrie there, it's so dangerous because they overload the back post. It's always Ilya at the back post waiting for that flick on. Though he wasn't there today, or though it ended up being, I forgot who got the goal today at the back post.
Roger Espinoza?
Reed, no, Reed got the goal at the back post. Roger's flick on actually went in, but Ilya was there to put it home if it hadn't. This team is not just good from open play. They are really smart about how they attack you on set pieces. That is something that actually has been a strength of Minnesota United, has been a strength of San Jose, though. And it was insane to me that San Jose came into this game and looked utterly perplexed that every single corner kick was going to the near post for that flick on from Sporting Kansas City. It was like, usually with the Quakes, you expect a level of insanity where something bizarre is going to happen or something wonderful, like Wando scoring in the 97th minute of a 94-minute game. Like, that's excellent, and that's why we love the Quakes. This was insanity of a different sort, where it's just like, why did you just not think to see what kind of corner kick routines they run? So it was like, it checked every box for me, this game did, including and especially the late Wando goal and Kansas City fans losing their minds because they don't know how stoppage time works.
Well, let's talk about that. Let's talk about that right now, because we could go on and on about how maybe you should put a man on the back post and that would solve a lot of problems for you defensively on set pieces. But they didn't do it, and that's why we're here. It was 2-2 going into stoppage time, and then it was 3-2 because Gianluca Busio scores the goal off, as you said,
first,
Charlie.
Wando has an open.
Oh, that came before that?
Saved by Steve Clark.
I didn't even remember how the order.
In the 89th minute, and it was one of those Wando things where it's like Buncic turned his head for a second, and Wando popped up behind him. And, like, what a save from Tim Meal. It's a double save because he saves the kid, Cade Cowell, there as well. And you're like, oh, it's just not meant to be for San Jose. And then
KC
put it, like, go straight back down in the other direction. Brilliant buildup on the
goal. Insane. I think the little drop off from Kyrie Shelton, not only to have the vision, but to have the technical ability to execute. And he pinged that with some speed at the feet of Busio, who calmly collected, finished, boom. Sporting Kansas City celebrating. My brother's texting me. He's like, what now? What now? Tell those guys what's up with Sporting Kansas City. And I was like, oh, yeah. So I hit up the email to Sporting KC's PR, and I'm like, oh, we need Gianluca Busio on the show. And then, oh, dear God, here it comes the other way. And Wando again. Wando in the 97th minute. My brother, as many Sporting Kansas City fans are, very salty about the amount of stoppage time. Do they have any case? Is there any case at all?
No, they have no case. They Busio scored. They rolled around on the ground celebrating for 2.5 minutes. For 2.5 minutes, they were celebrating that
goal.
Just
like a bunch of little puppies.
That gets added on. And then in the 95th minute, Wando has a shot, went out for a goal kick. It took Tim Melia 40 seconds to put the ball back into play. So, of course, the ref is going to keep adding stoppage time.
Although some refs don't do it. So I think that's why.
I feel like it happens more often in the playoffs. And the other thing, though, is like, this is what Peter Vermees complains about this every single week and this team is winning. Every single week he complains about this exact thing. So it was, I thought it was like a really fun bit of karma to watch this happen in the other direction.
Everyone knows that the whole world wants San Jose to beat SKC. Big bad San Jose. The ref always goes in their favor. Everyone knows that. Come
this,
on.
This is the year of 6, 7, 8 minute stoppage times. Like we've seen that a ton this year. There have been a ton of times where the board goes up.
2020 is Fergie time.
And I'm just like, what is going on here? So 4 minutes. And by the way, producer Rich, who runs Instant Replay, went back and did the math. And if you're actually going to go do all the goal celebrations, all the yellow cards in the second half, it's like 8 minutes. Stoppage time is not an exact science, so people should stop expecting it to be or saying, well, that's not always how I see it done. The laws of this game are basically down to referee discretion and judgment within that game, within those 45 minutes, live on the field. That's just what's up. You got to deal with it. You didn't defend Chris Wondolowski at the back post in the 97th minute up a goal. You reaped what you deserved. Like that's what happens. But then Tim Melia said, don't worry. We're good. We're going to hold it out an extra time, and then I am going to be the eraser. What do you think, Charlie? You're going to go up against Tim Melia. What are you going to do? How are you going to attack this man from the spot?
Well, I'm confident when I step up for the penalties. So
wow, it's like Charlie it's like the middle-aged Ricardo Pepe in here.
you have players. I heard Stu talk about on the air just saying, yeah, you pick your spot and you go. Well, nowadays, players have an idea where they're going, but if a keeper is cheating so much to one side, you're not going to that side, even if that's where you planned on going. So I usually look at where the keeper is leaning, and then I have the ability to kind of just place it in the opposite direction.
I can just put it wherever I want.
Yeah, well, the Quakes apparently didn't have that. Ability in this three straight saves for Tim Melia on the Earthquakes, as you said, Doyle. That's basically historic. That's only been done twice. We might as well just go talk to the man of the hour. We recorded this earlier on Sunday afternoon. Tim Melia on what he accomplished and what it means for Sporting Kansas City. Oh, it's an AT&T 5G call to the field. Tim Melia, Tim, you should be smiling more. You should have this massive. You just blanked. A team in the playoffs, you were basically waiting for these shots. You knew where they were going. Did you know you were going to win from the moment this went to PKs?
I didn't. I know that we have very good penalty takers. My objective is always to save one. That's what I think as a goalkeeper, you always tell yourself, just make a save and then your team will do the rest. But we have very good quality penalty takers and they made all three.
Tim, but for you, how do you read the kicker so well? Because, you know, some keepers like to guess, completely guess. Some do the studying, and then they try and wait for the kicker to take the shot and then move. You seem like you were moving before they shot. You knew exactly where it was going to go, and you didn't over-jump it.
I don't, but it's just accumulation of everything, right? Studying stats, feeling in the game, seeing the type of player that steps up, his run up, which foot goes back first, his approach on the ball. It's all things you're just kind of putting together in the moment and then trying to make the best decision.
Never going to give it away. I wouldn't give it away either, man. You got a secret sauce.
You got more playoff games coming. Yeah.
You got the secret sauce. You can't give this stuff away. How much were you thinking about? Because I was thinking about it, and I assume you are after yesterday. Your feet, the line, and the kicker.
Yeah, very, very nervous about that in particular because it is almost impossible as a goalkeeper to keep a foot on the line. I mean, just the breaking down the technique of a dive, you're taught your whole life to dive forward and move your feet forward. And then now, you know, seeing that penalty shootout yesterday, just like you don't want to overthink it. So what I told myself was do what I normally do. And if something happens, I'll deal with it on the fly. But I was lucky that nothing happened. I haven't seen any of the replays to see exactly where my feet are. I'm sure they were off somewhere, but
well, I saw you talking to Nima Sagafi before the shootout. Were you talking about that?
I just said let's not do anything silly. How hard it is to stay underlying completely, and both JT and I were kind of just like let's get through this clean.
I saw the first one, and I've seen now a screenshot, and that's the one that maybe looked like it was borderline. But I see the screenshot. I see your foot on the line. I saw you again look back to Nima and say, no way, no way, or something along those lines.
I did, because after the first save, it looked like they were holding up the next penalty shot and kind of like doing their typical VAR crap with their ear. And I didn't know it was going to happen, but fortunately, we got through it onto the next round.
So looking at this performance, what were the positives for you as a whole?
Yeah, I mean, coming down from a goal down was huge for us. I thought we started the game well, obviously got the goal, and then we're a little unlucky to get scored on. But then the second goal was, you know, exactly what we prepared for. You know, San Jose wants to get the ball wide and get the ball across. So we weren't happy that we got scored on the way that we prepared not to. But then to, you know, give up the late, get the late goal, give up another goal, kind of like a roller coaster of emotions. But all in all, we just need to advance. So hopefully we can use this momentum, you know, use it as a learning lesson to be a little more bunkered down late in the game, and then just continue to move through these playoffs.
Tell me about your mind through stoppage time, because this is the first time, to my knowledge, that there have been two goals in stoppage time in an MLS Cup playoff game, and the way that that happened.
It's crazy because you didn't feel like the game was over. We talked about a few weeks ago, they're an exciting team and they're so aggressive going forward, and they attack with that, you know, top four where they always have an opportunity. So for me, I'm staying back there knowing that, like, they're going to get another opportunity. They're going to get another opportunity. And then unfortunately they scored. So that's part of it.
Take us into the huddle after that, going into extra time. What are people saying? What was the emotions?
We just kind of needed to reset, new game, right? 0-0. It's a little emotional when you got the lead and then all of a sudden you don't, you're going into overtime. But reset, you know, get back to our game. We sat in a little bit, at times, I think a little bit too much, but we grinded it out. We got ourselves in the shootout and then our guys made it and we advanced.
Now, Minnesota or Colorado will all watch that game. I'm sure you'll go home and do the same. I do have to get back to the PKs though, man. You kind of ho-hummed this thing. You've never lost as a pro a shootout. That's incredible. That's true. I'm sorry. Okay, we won't say that. How about this? Let's go a different direction. What advice do you have for Rodrigo Schlegel, and does he need any?
I have no advice.
Looking like Spider-Man out there, trying to do his best. He is certainly not Tim Melia. Sporting Kansas City on to the next round. Tim, congratulations once again. We will speak no more of penalty kicks, jinxes, shootouts, or the next round in that sense. Thank you so much for your time, man.
Thank you, guys. Have a good night.
Good to hear from Tim Melia that he was having the same feelings that all of us were having as we watched that PK shootout, which was, I was completely focused, every bit of me, on the feet of the goalkeepers at the very moment of contact. And how could you not be after everything that happened yesterday? What do you guys think? What do you think? Anybody come off early? Tim Melia had a little head start. Anybody think that maybe not? I think the first one he was there. I know the video will play tricks on your mind. The first shot, I think he was on the line, but just barely. If you hit the freeze frame right at point of contact. But Charlie, what do you think? I know you had some strong takes.
No, I just said I think they're pretty close, and I'm glad that they weren't called back. So. We leave it at that.
All right, leave it at that. Who are you going to take, though? You have to have a PK. Your life is on the line. It must be saved for you to survive. Mm-hmm. Are you going Tim Melia or are you going Nick Raimondo?
I'm going Nicky Raimondo all day.
Really?
Yes.
You asked him if his life was on the line, not if the 2013 MLS Cup was on the line.
Oh. I'm going Nicky Raimondo all day. Oh, my God.
Anybody else going Tim Melia? Tim Melia
just so I get the celebration after where he says and edit.
Yes. Yes. Beep, beep. I mean, I don't know. I think that Tim Melia has the more consistent wins. Like, he's 6-0, man. Like, that's what I want when my life is on the line.
That's Chauncey Billups.
Go bigger sample size here.
Yeah, but I don't want a bigger sample size. I want winning in every opportunity possible because I'm trying to live.
That 6-0 Justin PK shootouts, and he also has the highest save percentage in regular season penalty.
Give me Tim Melia.
It's like 40-something percent.
He saves like almost half the penalties he's faced. He's faced a bunch. Like, it's not like Raimondo was great, absolutely. There's no question Tamil is better. There's no question at all. And like, it almost gives Sporting KC a built-in advantage. Everybody else in the playoffs has to play for a win. Sporting Kansas City can kind of just play for a tie, man. Like, he has been that dominant in penalties.
No one's going to play for a tie, but you feel confident going into a penalty shootout.
All right. We will talk more about Sporting Kansas City here in just a second after we talk about Minnesota, because they're going to face off, obviously. Let's hit the Quakes real quick before we get out of here. Peter Vermes said in his post game that Wando told him on the field, and boy, Wando's been in some real sort of telephone situations here about his future. Like, look, nobody knows what's going to happen but Wando. Nobody does. And actually, we have the audio, so that's beautiful. Anders, producing Anders. Give it to us. Peter Vermes.
Yeah, I wanted to know if he was going to come back, because if he's not coming back next year, that guy is, I love him. He's an unbelievable professional. He plays to the last second, as you saw even tonight. He's always in it. And, you know, I have a lot of respect for him. He's had an incredible career. So the good thing is he said he's coming back for one more year. So that's a good thing.
Peter Vermes breaking news. I love him, says Peter. I love that moment. Wando said, by the way, I believe afterwards, and like all that stuff with him talking to people in San Jose, that's all sort of been like, maybe not completely what he really feels. I think Wando said after this, the local press, that he wants to see the front office make a push, make the Quakes a contender. That's what he wants to see, and that's what he's basing it on. He's like, it's not about minutes. It's not about my body anymore. I want to be on a team that's contending for a championship. After this game, hold on, Matias Almeida also said, quote, I need to take 3-4 days off to see where I want to go, know what I want to do with my future.
Good. I think he's going to go watch SKC corner kick routines for 3-4 days to figure out what he missed.
He should have done that 3-4 days
probably before this game. But I just want to say, go ahead, real Dave. Quick, 100% Peter Vermes did not ask Wando if he's coming back next year. He asked if he wanted to come to SKC next year. I bet on that.
No, Matias Almeida is going to have options. A coach with his resume always has options. And him saying that, I think, is maybe a way to let the front office know that you can't go into the playoffs when Vaco is your only DP. You know, you can't go into the playoffs where your two best goal scorers are 37-year-old Chris Wondolowski and 34-year-old Chase Salinas. Those guys are great, and I hope they're both still on the team next year. But this Quakes team, they play some really good soccer. They need reinforcements, no matter what type of soccer they play. They need reinforcements for next year if they're going to go farther than they went this year.
All right, we'll see what happens with the Quakes. Matias Almeida, I mean, this is a coach that a couple weeks ago was saying, like, hey, let's end the season. I'm not about this anymore. Like, let's just call it good. Minnesota, Adrian Heath's always been hyped. He's always been intense about this. He wanted to write what happened last year in the Twin Cities, which was a playoff loss in their debut. They're back again. And then they made this thing, I'm going to just say, boring, because it wasn't like the other games. They just kind of stepped on the Rapids. They got that first goal, and then they just managed the game. And yes, the Rapids, from a finishing perspective, weren't about it. But Charlie, this was Kevin Molino game. That's what I'm calling it. Hot boy game. He's just a different class. Mm-hmm. When you look between these two sides, he and Bebelo Reynoso, they just stood out. And when those two guys are on, well, then Minnesota United are going to be on. They're going to be really tough to beat. They've still only lost once with Reynoso in the starting lineup.
Well, Kevin Molino is showing that what he's capable of. And we've seen it in bits and spurts throughout his MLS career. But when he's healthy, he's a game changer. He gives Minnesota what they've been missing. So that dynamic piece who can beat people off the dribble, who makes good runs, and scores when he gets the opportunity. And then Jan Gregoosh, Hassani Dotson, and then Reynoso, like you stated, are all good players. They make this team really tough to beat. Dane St. Clair, he's come in. He's grabbed his opportunity. He's made the saves when he had to. Another shutout that gives him the confidence. This team, and Robin Lode, another player who I think has started to got a grasp of what Major League Soccer is all about. How can he have success in his style? How does it suit the team? They're starting to look a lot better. And I think when they're at their best, they're really tough to beat because they can defend. They're good on set pieces. But now they have Kevin Molino up top who gives them a little bit of an edge and gives they know they can play on the counter against anybody.
I kind of mourn like 2015. I mourn 2018 into 2019. I mourn this like 2.5 year span where Kevin Molino just couldn't do what he was supposed to be doing, because when he's healthy, he is a 10-10 player in this league. That's third goal for Minnesota, his second goal, where he pauses, he hesitates, he sees the goalkeeper start to go down, and he just, it's almost like, I don't know, I want to make like a golf analogy on it, because it's almost like he uses his foot like a wedge and just kind of dinks it over, and he makes it look so easy. It's the balance, It's the speed at which he does things while things are happening very quickly around him. He just sort of makes things feel like they slow down a little bit. The left foot on the first goal. And Reynoso, I know it's not intentional, but it comes off perfectly. This is not a team I don't think that's going to be, other than those spurts, one that's like 90 minutes, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. But it is a team that might surprise him, all of us, all the way into the conference finals and beyond, because they have difference makers, which you have to have in these playoffs.
Yeah.
And they have sort of the, like, roll up your sleeves guys that get the job done.
And they might have more. Ozzie came off the bench for the last few minutes. We know Metanair is going to be back, which means you can slide Hassani Dotson in to midfield where he should be playing.
Instead of Harrison.
Struggles that fullback instead of Harrison, or on top of that, and you can move other pieces around, whatever it is. It just gives them more options. And I
would
think
also say DeBassi. DeBassi has been someone who stepped in and has made an impact. His athleticism with Boxall, I think he can cover those mistakes. Anytime Boxall's caught out of position or goes for a challenge and doesn't make it, DeBassi can be there. And Jose Aja, I think he did a good job filling in for Aiko Parra, especially we saw in the MLS back tournament. But you needed something a little bit more when you're talking about MLS Cup playoffs and these one-off games and how much they mean and the intensity rises to a certain level. DeBassi has been a player that has really helped this Minnesota team.
What would you do, Doyle, at the forward position, which is basically the question, you know, rinse and repeat for Minnesota United. Kai did not start this game. It was kind of a Robin Lud false nine experiment. I mean, he got a goal. He's been much better in the past like 6 to 8 months than he was at the start when everybody was saying, what, this guy can't score. What would you do if you're Adrian Heath?
It's a tough decision because you got Kai Kamara for games like this. You got Kai Kamara for the playoff push and the playoffs itself. But we saw Kai Kamara on the break tonight, and it didn't look like Kai Kamara of 3 years ago on the break. You know, he's not that guy anymore. And if you look at the way that Minnesota's probably going to have to play and going to want to play against Sporting Kansas City and how vulnerable Sporting Kansas City are on the counter, it almost makes more sense to go with Reynoso pulling the strings underneath Finlay, Lode, and Kevin Molino, and just like, okay, we know that Sporting's going to commit numbers forward. We're going to get our chances to go out on the break, so let's take advantage of our mobility and just have a very switchable front three and Reynoso diamond assists underneath them. That's what I would do. And then if it doesn't work, you get Kai for the last 30, 35 minutes to, you know, sort of throw everything you have at it.
All right. Before we dig more into that one.
Can I throw one thing out there? I don't mean to be too reductive a little bit off this, because I know Pedro Gallese was phenomenal yesterday. But I don't know how you watch these playoffs as an MLS executive, from Matt Turner to Joe Willis to Dane St. Clair to Tim Melia, and you go out and spend big on an international goalkeeper. And we still see it at times in MLS. And it blows my mind. Dane St. Clair was in college a year and a half ago, and he started a shutout in the postseason. Tim Melia was a pool goalkeeper for 10 years and didn't play Division I soccer. There are so many goalkeepers.
Matt Turner just started playing soccer in high school.
Yeah. It blows my mind that there are still clubs who spend $300,000 to $400,000 or TAM even for an international goalkeeper. Continue, Weaver.
And look, the other thing you have to say about all those guys is they were guys that got into a system and then developed. Like Matt Turner, just walk in. They drafted him. They developed him.
Jimmy Mauer started the year as a backup and then just saved a penalty kick.
Dane St. Clair spent 5 games on loan at Forward Madison last year and then moved halfway through this year. He wasn't going to be the starter into the starting lineups, and a great job. And we talked to him after they had a big win in the Twin Cities. Let's hear that from Dane St. Clair. It's an AT&T 5G call to the field. Out to the Twin Cities, we are going to Dane St. Clair, who's not holding his own phone because you got to protect those hands, Dane. First win in the playoffs in Loons history. First shutout, obviously, in Loons playoff history goes to you. How are you feeling right now?
I feel great. I mean, I think it was a complete team performance. I mean, to put on defensively, to keep clean sheet, and to go out and score 3 goals, I think it was a perfect result if we would have looked to ask for that going into the game.
We have had some treats, let's say, from an entertainment perspective in these Audi 2020 MLS Cup playoffs. I am not throwing any shade at you right now at
all. We're already doing it.
That this game was less entertaining, but that's exactly the way you would have wanted it to play out, right? Like, you had a couple big saves, but for the most part, your game plan clearly worked just the way you wanted it to.
For sure. I mean, I think any time that we can get 3 points and keep a clean sheet, it's a perfect day in my book.
But well, for you guys, it's been moving pieces defensively. Again, Metzener not in this time, DeBassi playing in at center back. What is it between this back five that's worked over these last few weeks?
I mean, I think we all have trust in each other, and there's a good relationship off the field as well. So it doesn't matter who steps in. We all want the best. I mean, Hassani played a lot of games last year at right back, so we knew that he was more than capable. DeBassi's played center back and played really great. Chase and Boxy slotted back in as well, and I think it was just a great team performance from the whole back line.
He had 6 saves. What was the most impressive for you? What was the one that, like, calmed the nerves?
I mean, I think you always want to make the first save that comes in. So I think early on in the game, I think, is an important save as well to keep the score 0-0 and then give us the confidence to move forward.
Let's talk about Kevin Molino. Dane, you face this guy. Hot boy. Got to throw it in there. You see him all the time in training. He has the cheeky finishes. He showed it tonight. When you're watching back in the goal and you see him with these goal-scoring opportunities, what's going through your head before he finishes and after he finishes?
I mean, I think any time that he's in front of the goal, the whole team has confidence that he's going to put the ball in the back of the net or force the keeper to make a great save. So any time that we can get him in those positions, I think is a great thing for us. And as soon as the ball goes in the back of the net, of course, we all celebrate crazy.
I see that little smile, though. Come on, man. Yeah. Give us a little bit on, give us a little bit on Hot Boy, because it's too much swag for one man. That's the way I see it.
Yeah, I mean, I think he just has the confidence in himself. I mean, this is his first season fully healthy in a long time, so I think that's really given him the confidence. And then to push on forward with the season he had, I think he's been brilliant for us and really a key player.
What was his
enough for the token?
What's his outfit? What was his outfit? What's he wearing? I see him bring the heat. Come on.
Enough of the Soka Warrior. Let's talk about Dane.
Again, to spice up the suit that we have to wear in.
All right, Dane, I want to talk about you specifically. You come in for Tyler Miller. I want to know how much growth have you seen within yourself since your debut with the Loons?
I mean, I think my goal in coming in was to try to get better with each game, and I think I've done that, but I was just taking the opportunity as it came, because you never know in this, and you always got to be prepared.
You were, I think, I want to say the fans, we did the Dwayne De Rosario Canadian Player of the Year. I believe you won our fan vote. Now, Richie Larea, I hate to break the news to you, Dane, but Richie Larea got the official award. But tell me about what this year means to you personally. Like, yeah, you got in, you're proving yourself, but this is the first step in what you hope is a long career.
For sure. I mean, I think it was kind of, with the way this year's gone, it's been really tough. And then to go out on loan, get my games, and then be called back, I think it's been brilliant for me. And then to come in and perform the way I have, I think has gone well. And I couldn't have asked for anything better.
I don't want to break Gabby's arms. I want to get some question in here quick. Obviously, no fans in the stadium hurts, but Wonderwall's got to hit a little different after a playoff win. History, big moment. What was it like after this finish? How do you feel right now?
For sure. I mean, the boys are buzzing. I think coming in, we wanted to improve upon last year. So, of course, we made playoffs and had a home game last year, but we weren't able to get that win. So I think going to this game, we want to get a win and then see what's next for us.
Give us the short scouting report on Sporting Kansas City. You've seen them personally one time this year. I believe Sporting won in that game. What do you think?
I mean, we know they're a good team and it's going to be difficult to play against, but leading up to the game, we'll get some more information on them. I think going into this game, it was just focusing on this one and moving forward after.
All right, man. If it goes to PKs, you know what's happening on the other side with Tim Melia. It's your chance to shine. We know the gaff is watching. You know we got to get in there. Thank you so much, Dane St. Clair, for joining us, man.
Yeah, thank you.
Bye.
Apparently, Adrian Heath was staring daggers in old Dane St. Clair because he had a press conference he needed to do. We could have talked to the gaffer, but alas, maybe soon.
Because he told Dane St. Clair, we don't do interviews with real estate websites. Get out of here.
Well, now we're going to talk to Adrian. If they make a run, we certainly will try to get him onto this show. Congratulations to him on this win, 3-0. What do you think about Colorado in this game? Before we move on and kind of quick hit the rest of the weekend. The Rapids, Robin Fraser said it came a little too early for them. He said, we just didn't have sort of the institutional experience, the knowledge, and then the quality, honestly, in those big moments.
I don't think there's any, I can't disagree with any of that. Looking through their lineup, I think they only had one guy over the age of 30. Most of them were 25 or below. Arguably, their most experienced MLS central midfielder is Kellen Acosta. He was playing at left back. Diego Rubio is nice player, but he's nobody's idea of an elite striker in MLS. He's your number nine in this game. Jonathan Lewis, who I generally really, really like, he had one big chance early in this one. St. Clair made a great save on it, and Lewis just completely fell out of the game after that and was subbed at halftime. So it felt like everything compounded. And on the opposite side, you have a veteran team who made the playoffs last year and used that experience and added a massive DP in Reynoso. And that's the recipe for for a pretty solid win that's bordering on a blowout. But I do think this Rapids team will be better next year. And I did really like the way they played, basically from like early September onwards. They have an idea of how they want to play. They use the ball. They have some talent. They just need to upgrade in a couple of spots.
All right, we will go more into the matchup between Sporting KC and Minnesota on Tuesday night's post-game pod, which will also double as our second podcast of the week because everybody wants to have some Thanksgiving dinner, even if you don't get to see your family or whatever it may be because of COVID and the current pandemic. Remember, mask up, be safe, be responsible. Let's go through some mail here and kind of hit the other games. Orlando City, we got some mail on this one. I don't know who it's from here. I don't see a name, but here it goes. I was watching the Orlando NYCFC game with my boys as the game got chippier and chippier. The older one said that someone else was going to get sent off, and there was no way Juan would be the only one. My younger one, who aspires to be a goalkeeper, was desperate for penalties, and they both got their wish. Now, if only Orlando had Zerick Valentin to help them count penalties. Yes, that was one of the moments.
That's a good cut. Right,
that was right one there. Of the moments, yeah. Man. Oh, my yeah. God. I still have as my background on Twitter, Zerick Valentin on his hand explaining to the Portland Timbers teammates why they had not yet won because of away goals. So from this this listener, where does this one rank in our list of most bonkers MLS playoff games? While there were long stretches where both teams seemed to be playing not to lose, including NYCFC up a man, the ending of the game pushes it into the top tier for me, along with 2003 Quakes Galaxy, the double post game in 2016 Toronto Montreal. What do we think? Where does it rank and how does it rank? Because these are all different sorts of insanity. You know, like 2003 is comeback insanity. 2016 Toronto Montreal had a little bit of everything. It had the comebacks, it had the goals, it had the big stars, but also had somebody forgetting how to measure an 18-yard box.
The whole world watching someone paint yes. lines.
We had all those classic remixes and classic throwbacks.
Oh, we've done them all.
Yeah, we've done them all.
How does this measure up? Like, when you think about this one or how we might think about this one in 5-10 years, what will we be thinking about?
We'll be thinking about Schlegel. 100% Schlegel going in goal. And I just think, you know, New York City really let this one get away. When Juan goes off with a red card, you really had an advantage. You had an opportunity to go to be aggressive and to really, you know, take advantage of being up a man. And they didn't do that. It was almost as if Orlando was like, all right, we can be comfortable. They're just going to sit back and we're not really under pressure. So I think New York City FC, when they watch this game, Ronnie Dial is going to watch the match and say, I didn't do my job here. I didn't give us a good opportunity, maybe change the tactics, maybe make adjustments as far as playing with one extra attacker. You didn't see it. So I think we're going to talk about that. We're also going to talk about Alan Chapman and the referee. And then we're going to talk about...
Not for the rest of this postseason, we're not.
And then we're going to talk about Schlegel just stepping up for his team, saying, I can do this, Poppy. And then him doing it.
And this
it's
is
also
after.
One of those. It's one of those moments where you can go back and rewatch it, but the experience of it—the 25 minutes—that's what I say of it happening and like yelling and trying to understand and like reading Twitter because you actually do not understand what's going on in the television in front of you, which is showing you what's happening. That's like what I'm going to remember, and I remember like the Tuck Rule with the Patriots and that snow game. I remember where I was watching that and like the experience of it happening and talking with people about it and all those things. That's what it is for me. It was one of those communal MLS moments where everyone was locked in. And then, you know, today I get messages, what's going on in Orlando from the people who don't watch MLS?
Yeah.
Because it went viral to that extent. But that's what I'll remember is that time.
It wasn't a good look.
Try to figure it out. Yeah, but it's chaos. That's fun.
Also, you said Patriots, so Charlie got really happy there.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I have to get him.
I have to get him so happy. I got give so me happy. A break.
Crew, of course, survived the Red Bulls. Gerhard Struber, he coached his first game in the playoffs. Bill Carroll, the legend, in Red Bull section 132. He says, great weekend of soccer. Really miss not being in the stadium. White is our top goal scorer and Kaku's our best player on the bench. What was Struber thinking? Can you guys get a town hall meeting set up for us Red Bull supporters?
Go ahead, Goss.
Ooh, it begins. Welcome to the New York Red Bulls.
His name. We're already there. Yeah, I didn't think this was a great idea. I think it kind of ended the way it ended. The Red Bulls lost 3-2. They got a scrappy goal. They made it tough for Columbus in a couple moments. They're not as good as Columbus. And so I didn't think there was any huge things that stood out where you said Gerhard Struber lost this game. And I don't think there was any expectation.
I mean, wait a minute. I think that starting Tom Barlow instead of Brian White was a head scratcher. I don't agree.
Stop it.
You guys, well, I don't disagree with that. Bradley Carnell has been there the whole time. Obviously, he had an input. It wasn't just a coach that's coming in has no idea what's going on.
Also, Tom Barlow created the goal for Caden Clark.
I mean, a failed clearance from Harrison Offal created the goal.
Was Brian White going to take someone on from 40 out and put one in a corner? It was always going to have to be scrappy. I don't think this game.
That's fine, but like he is your top goal scorer, and like we have a sample size now with Brian White. He's played. He's got 16 goals in like 2,400 MLS minutes, whereas Tom Barlow has 3 in like 2,000. At some point, you have to kind of trust the numbers on those guys. So I think there's some fair criticism. I don't buy the Kaku criticism. Because Kaku has not been their best player this year. He hasn't been their best player other than like a 2-month stretch early in the 2018 season. And I think with the Red Bulls, it comes down to what it always comes down to is they
commitment and work ethic.
Well, but that's what I'm saying. It needs to come down to talent, right? And like they went into this game and who made the play on the first penalty kick? It was Zellerayan nutmegging Sean Davis at central midfield. And then like that leads to a Pedro Santos, who's a DP, like, so one DP gets a nutmeg, the other DP converts the penalty kick. Jossie gets a goal. He's a DP striker. So the DPs on Columbus delivered. The Red Bulls DPs are Kaku and Drew Yearwood. Like, they need to go out and they need to get some top end talent. I still think the core of this team is good. Obviously, a couple places need to be trimmed, though.
This year, the regression from Aaron Long and Tim Parker is worrying because. Sure. I thought that was brilliant to have two American center backs, pay Tim Parker to be there no matter what. You want to keep Aaron Long, but if you don't, you still have Parker. It seemed like the right way to build an MLS team. Seemed brilliant, and they just haven't been there individually, and that's caused a lot of the structure to break down for this team. They need them to play at a higher level because they gave them the contracts to do it.
It turns out it's easier to play at a higher level at center back when you have Tyler Adams in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about another midfield who changes the game. Philadelphia and the Revs run it back, baby. The sixth time this year, 4 wins, 1 draw for the Union against the Revs. Of course, Bruce Arena got out his he tried out his little bit there, and he was like, they should just give us the supporters' shield because we handed them 13 points. Charlie, how can the Revs break through that midfield difference? That's Carlos Hill and Hill, and that was the difference. Against Montreal, mm-hmm. It has been the difference when they were good last year. He is one of the best midfielders in the league. He might make the difference in this one.
He could and he should because he'll be the best player on the pitch. I think for Carlos Hill, it's always been just getting in a rhythm because when he's on the ball, he goes all over the field and he's good in tight spaces. We saw what he did in the game where they lost 2-0 at the end of the regular season. To Jose Martinez on the sideline just to start the game. You thought, oh, Jose Martinez, buckled his knee. He maybe be out, but he bounced back and had a wonderful match for Philadelphia Union. But Carlos Hill, he is a game changer. He's a match winner. If he's playing well and creating opportunities, and you have Gustavo Bow firing from all over the field, and he's putting his shots on target, they're a different team. They've been a team where. You had to worry about the midfield. That's what the Revolution have had to worry about. And in that last regular season game against Philadelphia Union, they played with one defensive midfielder, and that was Scott Caldwell, who cannot cover the pitch. He doesn't have the athleticism to play as a lone six in this league, and he's never played lone six in this league. So then Bruce Arena next match goes back to having the two defensive midfielders behind Carlos Hill. or behind Gustavo Bo, whoever's going to play that advanced attacking midfield position. And that brings stability to the lineup. You have two players protecting the back four. And that's why they've played against Philadelphia Union every match this year, and it's been close other than that last regular season match, because they clogged the middle. And when you clog the middle against the Philadelphia Union, Brandon Aaronson doesn't have that much space, Jamiro Montero doesn't have that much space, and Alejandro Bedoya doesn't have that much space. And therefore, that's the heart of the Union. That's where they make their money, on the transition game. Mark McKenzie, stellar. He's stellar, but that's one center back. Jacob Glasnost has to be top of his game when you talk about 1v1 defending, whether you're tracking Teal Bunbury making a run in behind you or Gustavo Bo. Adam Buxa is one player that has to be good for the New England Revolution to beat the Philadelphia Union.
All right, we went close to the end here because we're past 2 a.m. And I think, I know I'm losing some steam here, but Chris Hole had a really good email.
I'm going to jump in line for a COVID test in about 5 minutes.
Cool. We'll let you get out of here. Chris Hole, though, says, hey, could we get some time next show to let Charlie Davies explain how Nashville plays one-dimensional soccer? I think he has some really fresh takes on that, which haven't been fully explored and deserve some attention.
Lazy narrative.
Coming at you there, Charlie, for Nashville.
There's nothing lazy about it whatsoever.
But you picked him over Toronto.
Exactly. My whole point is this. We all know how Nashville play. There's no secret. They defend. They look to counter. They look for transition game and set pieces. That is it. It's not pretty. No one enjoys watching the way Nashville play. And on top of that, who gets the most touches for Nashville? It's Daniel Lovitz. That's your left back, okay? Your left back gets the most touches. Romney has the most passes and the most successful passes for your team. Those are two defensive players. That's who makes the game for you in buildup. So there is no lazy narrative. There is nothing new when you watch Nashville play. It's defend, 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 and hopefully we make a turnover and we can transition and have Leal shoot from 25 yards out and have him find the upper 90, or we have Dax McCarty dribble from midfield with his pace, because he's electrifying pace, as he's talked about with Doyle. He's Alphonso Davies, and dribble all the way to the 18 so Miami center backs can drop to the 6-yard box and he bends it into the far corner. That's what Nashville is. Everyone knows how they play, and they're tough to play against because they can park the bus and still win games. So when they play against TFC, which I have them beating TFC, because they frustrate teams. They make teams be a little bit ultra aggressive because they can't break through Nashville. And as soon as you make that one misstep, you make that one poor pass, and you force a turnover, Nashville finds their way in your half on a counterattack and they score. Or you foul them, and then that set piece, Walker Zimmerman bangs it home. And then they can prevent you from scoring a goal. So that's why I think Nashville are effective. They play defensively. And just be happy with it. If you're a Nashville fan, be happy. Be happy. Not every team can play like Barcelona or Liverpool or Manchester City. Some teams have to play like Stoke City. And some teams have to play that aggressive long ball. But they still win. So we'll leave it at that.
Man, it is 2:18 a.m. on the East Coast. And Charlie, you just brought it right there, man. Hey, I did not think you had that in you.
You got me fired up. As soon as someone's going to, you know, say, hey, does Charlie have something new to say about Nashville? Like, look, no, I don't. It's the same story. We've seen it the whole season. Yet they're successful at it. So I give Gary Smith a ton of credit because he's got this team believing. They believe in the system, and they're all bought into it. And then you have the heart of the team, whether Walker Zimmerman, Romney, Godoy, McCarty, right there, that box of four is the heart of Nashville. They set the tone. They get everybody organized, and then they know exactly when to counter. They set the tempo as well. So kudos to Nashville. Kudos to the fan base. Kudos to their first inaugural season, getting into the playoffs, and kudos to beating Toronto FC in that next match.
He's always been a believer.
I talked about this with you guys on Friday night, like, to Charlie's point, own it. You guys are the best defensive team in the league. Just stand on that hill and be proud of that. But also, don't have to alienate everyone else. And let's just say there's a certain team who maybe won a playoff game today, who are an underdog that everyone would love, and then calls everyone out individually and says, why do you all hate us, when no one did, and then created that narrative. Nashville's like attempting to follow that for no reason. Mm-hmm. Like, we all enjoy it. If you're an underdog and you win against a favorite, everyone likes you. You don't have to then come out and be like, you guys all questioned us in your face. It doesn't really help the narrative.
No, it doesn't. Yeah,
but it does feel good, I bet. I bet it feels really good.
Also, winning feels good.
I would absolutely, do that if I was in their shoes. Are you kidding me? You're insane, Gasman. You absolutely have to do that.
Dunk
it. Dunk it.
Toronto, Nashville, 6 p.m. Eastern on Tuesday, FS1. Then you have Philly, New England, ESPN. Then it's an ESPN doubleheader because Seattle LAFC followed up at 10:30 p.m. Eastern. Anybody going to pick LAFC? If not, we'll get out of here.
I'm not going to pick LAFC, but I am really looking forward to this game. And if they have Carlos Vela and Bradley Wright Phillips up top, it doesn't matter that the third attacker is a 16-year-old. They're going to find at least a couple of goals, and they're going to make Seattle really, really work for it. The thing is,
I think it comes down to Bob Bradley. If LAFC beats Seattle, it's because of Bob Bradley and his tactical game plan. It worked out, and he outcoached Schmetzer. That's the only way LAFC win this match.
I think Carlos Vela could still take it over. I think he'd have two moments, and then that's it.
Yeah,
he's still working his way back.
Him working his way back is still like 2 miles in front of everybody else.
It'd be a lot closer. It'd be a lot harder to say, oh, for sure, or yeah, it's most likely Seattle. If he was 100% and he was scoring, you know, he has 20 goals to behind his name. Yeah.
All right, that's it from us. Big thanks.
One real quick note. Our guy Paul Kennedy tweeted this one out. I didn't even process this. The top five youngest goal scorers in MLS playoff history. Heading into this weekend, only one player under the age of 19 had ever scored in a playoff game. And that was Jozy Altidore in 2006. This weekend, we had Gianluca Busio, 18. Ricardo Pepi, who opened the show for us, 17. And Caden Clark on Saturday, 17 years old. So how's that for just a signifier of a massive change in MLS, and I think a sign of what's to come for this league in terms of player development.
I love it. In honor of John Strong, 7 down, 10 more to go. The Audi 2020 MLS Cup playoffs roll on. Tuesday's up next. Big thanks, as you said, to Ricardo Pepi for being here with us, Dane St. Clair as well, and then also Tim Melia, who had a huge, huge night. That's it for us. Thanks for watching or listening whenever you consume this. We'll be back on Tuesday for the pregame show. That's the Audi 2020 MLS Cup Playoffs pregame show. And then we have the postgame show late at night. So make sure you brew some coffee, boys. Have a great week, everybody.